Hi everyone, it's Adam from Monkey Tennis here. Just saying a huge thank you to all of you that have supported my charity appeal so far. For those that haven't heard about it, this September I'm going to be swimming 15 kilometres between five islands in Cornwall. I'll be swimming the Isles of Scilly, that's Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. I'm doing it because I want to, but also to raise money for CALM, the campaign against living miserably. It's a well-known statistic that 125 people in the UK die by suicide every week, and CALM run a free and confidential helpline for people to speak through their problems and ultimately to help prevent suicides. I'm looking to raise enough money to train two new phone workers to man those lines, and I'll be doing it by swimming the Isles of Scilly in Cornwall. If you're looking to support me, it would be greatly appreciated. You can donate at justgiving.com. Just go there and search for Adam Swim Scilly. That's Adam Swim Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. All donations greatly appreciated. Thank you for helping me to support CALM. And now, on with Monkey Tennis.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Monkey Tennis?
Well, this is great banter.
Hot ham. Monkey Tennis?
Radical. Awesome. Mega.
Are you on an E? Monkey Tennis?
Yeah.
I'm spinning plates here, mate, I'll be honest. Monkey Tennis?
There have been times when I've been more rubbery than turgid.
Monkey Tennis?
Tits bits. Tit bits.
Yes.
It's just an idiom.
You're an idiot.
Ooh, that's mustard.
Monkey Tennis?
Sustaining and maintaining our core listenership in an increasingly fragmented marketplace.
Hello, friends, and welcome back to Monkey Tennis, the Alan Partridge fan podcast. I'm Adam Brooks, and I'm joined as ever by Tom Dark.
Ooh, I'd love to have it off with her.
Nick Alder.
Come to Scotland.
And Tom Stab.
Fuck off.
So we are coming to you live from Bristol, England this time, because it's actually the eve of our Mid-Evening Matters tour. But before we get onto that, we're going to rattle through some of your feedback from the last series and beyond, starting with Mr. Tom Dark.
I also think it's worth telling listeners we're actually coming to you live from Adam's house in Brislington as well, which is very exciting for all of us to be here.
It's an upgrade on Jez's dungeon studio.
It really is. Jed is now crying in the corner. I'll start with a bit of some quick fire feedback just to warm us up for this. So Sandy Quick on Facebook said about the tour, shouldn't it be early evening event because Alan likes alliteration? I thought, fair point, actually. We probably should have called it that.
I mean, that's true.
Yeah, it could have been.
Yeah, but most importantly, it's not. It's mid-evening matters.
Unfortunately, Sandy, we've done all the flyers now, so
I mean, it starts tonight, so we're just confirming it is too late to change the name.
I think it's too late.
Yeah, should have sent it at Christmas, mate.
And we had some responses for our fantastic teletext-based chat in the Comic Relief specials. Matt Johnson said his favourite page was 302 Football.
Classic.
Peep at Peep Show Wrong on Twitter said Turn of the Worm was their favourite.
I don't remember Turn of the Worm.
No idea.
I think that was a game.
Is this like the equivalent of the Dark Net? There's like a hidden teletext
dark
page
teletext
where worms rule supreme.
We did get a thumbs up from Jed, so yeah.
Jed knows. Was it a game? Teletext game? No. What was it?
It was just a character on teletext that was really blocky.
Well, I mean, everything on teletext
was really blocky. Was it like teletext equivalent of the Microsoft paperclip?
Yeah, essentially. It was that, like, their character that you warm to.
Pull the mic away. Jess has had more than enough.
We've been rude about his recording studio, so I was trying to give something back.
Fair enough.
Anyway, we're not really making this quick fire, are we? And Ross Carpenter also said definitely 302 for football, though Bamboozle was a caravan holiday treat for playing just after breakfast. CFAX 302 was straight on in the afternoon on a Saturday.
I completely agree with Ross there.
That is very specific about Bamboozle. Only in a caravan holiday. Only on holiday and only just after breakfast. If it's 10:30, you've missed your window.
Exactly. We've also had some Toblerone news sent to us over the last few months. David Stewart on Facebook got in touch to say that the bar is reverting to its original shape, so good news there.
Not good news for Alan. Surely if he's going on another Toblerone binge, he wants it to be stripped back as much as possible.
Well, hopefully he's not. He's a reformed addict now. So I think
What was the change again? There was the gap between the two segments.
The gap was bigger. There's basically less chalk for your money. Yep. And Daniel Smith also got in touch on Facebook, sending us a link that you can now get white chocolate Toblerone ice creams.
And,
so good to know.
And regular chocolate Toblerone ice creams, which I have tried and are delicious.
Would eat.
Yeah, I was going to say absolutely would eat, and also would predict Alan would have tried.
And linking from Toblerone's chocolate-based question, Team Choc, which is at Ollie Choc Party, sent us this. Can I shock you? I would genuinely like to make a chocolate replica of Alan Partridge and turn it into a popular TV show. Do you think it would get commissioned?
Now, I feel like the first sentence of this, I would genuinely like to make a chocolate replica of Alan Partridge, and the next bit, and then turn it into a popular TV show. There needs to be about 1,000 words between those to explain what the link is. You're just going to put a chocolate Alan on telly, and
can you commission it?
Firstly, it'll melt under the lights.
I assume they mean a programme that tells the journey of making a chocolate replica of Alan.
I think
that's a one-off programme.
I think you'd be lucky if UK Conquest commissioned that, to be honest. Yeah.
Maybe Amazon Prime.
Okay, so I feel like we're leaning towards we're not commissioning.
I think it's a no.
What I did enjoy about this message, though, they did use the emoji with the finger going on the bell, which I thought was quite good. That sounds quite bad, but the commissioning bell, which we don't have here.
Yeah. But we wouldn't have sounded it anyway.
So it doesn't matter. Yeah. Another food-based message for us from at Fugnanger.
Fugnanger.
I am of the North and still recall the reverent silence around the dinner table as the noble Chucky egg was revealed from beneath its ceremonial silver cloche. Is it cloche? Is that how we say it?
Yeah, we had to Google cloche. This before. Cloche is how you... It's basically a silver
ceremonial serving tray.
Yep.
So that is somebody of the North backing up Adam for it being a meal of the North.
What I like is that this guy clearly thinks that we're all such southern softies that we'll just accept that at face value. Yeah, sounds about right. Sounds about right, yeah. Yep. Oh, yeah, I'm sure there was a cloche. Yeah.
And going from chicken to egg... going from egg to chicken.
Which came first?
Funny you should say that. Lottie Lambshank has been in touch, and she asks, how many times do you think Alan has asked for a Nando's black card?
I don't even know if he reckons such a thing exists.
I mean, we know he's a fan of Nando's. Yes. He's got the NES, NES.
Don't you think, though, that the Nando's black card, if I understand it, was genuinely, normally handed out to sort of urban celebrities, rappers and so on.
Yep.
I think it would have gone under Alan's radar. I think his mind would be blown that it exists. I mean, look at the reaction he had when he got, what was it, a Burton's gold card.
And with that, I lost consciousness. Yeah.
Imagine the panic that would set in if he had the Nando's black card.
He'd absolutely lose his mind.
Would it change his NES, Nando's efficiency system, or do you think he would take his time once it was free?
I don't think it would change it.
Well, fair enough.
was Lottie Lambshank the person who messaged in with the Alan Partridge Monopoly game?
I believe it was, and we've got more Monopoly chat to come later.
Always good to hear from you, Lottie Lambshank.
Please do keep writing in. Next up, I'm going to cover the Comic Relief 90s portion that we spoke about. So first up, we have a message from Sarah Lockyer. So she says, hi, love the podcast. Can't stress that
enough. Sarah. Thanks a lot.
I've been perusing Alan's various contributions to Comic Relief over the years, waiting for the Partridge Pod to start again. Will you be discussing these at any point in the future? There are quite a few.
So obviously that email came before we released these episodes, to be clear.
Yeah, as I was kind of reading that out, I was thinking, well, have we? Yeah, so we can say, yes, we have.
We have.
Yeah. She also then goes on to basically say, also see the link for Comic Relief 1999, in which Alan gives out Carol's credit card details, date of birth as the 14th of April, 1943. Again, I don't know if that's... and the mother's maiden name. I don't know if that's correct, but obviously that would have made her pretty old.
Doesn't that make her 75 this year?
Well, I think that's kind of her point, that the fact that that's down as her date of birth is a bit mental and is either an error or a gag.
I mean, it would also make her a dalliance with a fitness instructor even stranger, because that That age gap must be colossal.
Okay, next up we have a message from Barbara Kirk. Always lovely to hear from you.
Hey, Barbs.
Would Tony have been another marriage in name only, as in trying to get a visa to stay in the country?
Ooh, I mean, I think yes. I think that was the implication from
Tony
the
Allen's Canadian wife, wasn't it, that we found out about?
Yeah. So, yeah, quite possibly. I think we agree with you there. We're saying yes. And then next up we have a message from Matthew Paris that says, hi gang, any reason why this sketch wasn't covered in your Comic Relief podcasts? And he sent us a link to a clip where Alan interviews Noel Gallagher with Simon Pegg.
So the answer to your question, Matthew, the reason we didn't cover that is it's actually not from Comic Relief. It's actually from a fundraiser that I think was on Channel 4 called something like Live from the Lighthouse. So technically you are bang wrong.
So what year was that? When was that?
Dunno.
Okay, great.
Yeah, but
I think it was kind of like late. I think it was a very, very similar period to the late 90s Comic Relief where he did do the thing with Simon Pegg. It feels like quite a similar sort of thing.
And it's one of those nuggets of Alan Gold that doesn't fit into a neat category. So I expect at some point we may well do a Partridge sort of Flotsam and Jetsam roundup.
Some kind of Partridge mop up.
Yeah, a Partridge soup. An idiotic broth.
Thanks, Nick. So I'm going to be covering the Mid-Morning Matters Series 1 feedback. We start with Benji, who is at Escape Here, I assume, on Twitter. And he asks, is Mid-Morning Matters the best Partridge thing that has ever been made? I'll open it to the group. What do we think?
Well, it's hard to say because we're about to cover Series 2 on tour, obviously. Yeah, so we're only halfway through.
No.
Wow! Straight in there.
I mean, I agree, but yeah. I mean, it's still really strong.
I mean, the pool is all really strong, so you're kind of like there hasn't been any bad Partridge. I think that's one of the things that we can probably all say. The standard is consistently very, very high.
It's not. It's definitely the most iconic. I think it's one of those that, much like Beatles albums, throughout your life you'll have different favourites at different moments. Right now I think Mid-Morning Matters is among my favourites. It certainly hasn't always been.
So what Beatles album is this apart from the Best of the Beatles? I think it's like the White Album or something like that.
I think this is, you know, it's slightly experimental. It's still got some hits, but you know, it makes you think, it requires you to do a bit more work.
I'm liking this a lot.
It's the White Album, whereas like I'm Alan Partridge Series 2, very much Yellow Submarine, I was going to say. Right. But yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I really like Mid-Morning Matters, but I think it's a very different beast from things like I'm Alan Partridge. But anyway, we've got a whole series to come on that, so yeah, we'd probably leave that there.
Yep, and James Hart asks, did Alan Partridge name his house Denton Abbey after Psychic Simon, or is that just a coincidence? What do we think about that?
Oh, I wonder if that's almost, is that the joke, that he's named it after Simon, but he would never do that.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
But is that the joke?
But then also we have speculated in the past that it was a play on Downton Abbey.
Yeah, but Simon's surname is Denton.
Yep,
that's correct.
You've done your research.
I suspect Psychic Simon's surname was the inspiration for a bit of wordplay that Alan came up with, and he liked the wordplay so much that he named the house after it, but he certainly didn't do it in tribute to
No,
Simon.
God, no.
That's my best theory.
But I think from looking... the one thing that I think we can be correct on is that it isn't directly referenced in any of the Partridge books or shows, that like why he's named it that.
No, we don't have any more knowledge on that.
James Hart also sent another message about a month later.
Very
keen to get in contact. And he says that he was watching episode 3 ahead of the next Monkey Tennis podcast, and he's intrigued as to how Alan can sound so close, mic'd on the sofa during the Inception bit, while he's so far away from any microphones.
Well, yes, James. I think this is something I may have raised in series 1, and spoiler alert, may raise again in series 2. There are sections where they're nowhere near a microphone, and yet they're still being picked up as if they were.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's just...
That's get into pedant's corner, isn't
it?
It's absolutely get into pedant's corner.
I mean, if we're here for any reason, it's to get into pedant's corner.
Yeah, I think, yes, he's got a point, but equally you just have to kind of let it go because, yeah, there are so many points in both Series 1 and Series 2 where they're nowhere near a mic, and it's just the conceit of how the programme works, isn't it?
Yep, and finally for the Mid-Morning Matters Series 1 feedback, we have Dean Tonner, who asks simply, what is the best episode in Series 1?
Yeah, because I think I'm pretty sure we said we were going to talk about that at the last episode and then we didn't.
Great, good work us.
That's probably what happened.
So should we not bother now either?
Yeah, let's give it a miss.
Let's pass on. So straight on to your Mid-Morning Matters DVD differences. First up, it's David Council. He says, chaps, a short note to let you know, the original Foster's webisodes are not exactly the same as the Sky episodes. Ah. They contain additional material. This is especially evident in the Tax episode. That's Tax, not Tex. he said, you see the scene where Simon says, shall I update your business card? And Alan says, if you would, and then passes him a stack. Because that was cut out, because I remember thinking it was quite funny that they talk about him adding, like, whatever it is, like web entrepreneur to his business card, and then it just cuts to Simon doing it one by one in biro. But there was actually a scene that connected those two things. But I mean, I guess we established the joke is funny and possibly funnier without that explanation there.
I think, I guess possibly they had the hindsight of being able to rewatch them and cut any things that they think didn't work or make any changes to the narrative in terms of editing.
Or there was just
like
a basic
that.
Contractual requirement to make it a certain length suitable for broadcast.
Yeah.
Well, I've actually heard on the grapevine that the writers didn't always consider the TV version to be kind of the best way to consume it necessarily, because perhaps because it involved these cuts.
Mm. Well, like you say, you would have to make it a certain length, so it's normally like 22 minutes or 28 minutes for a half hour slot on TV broadcast. So yeah, doing it online, they can make it as long as they like.
And for series 1, I mean, it was made with the web in mind, wasn't it? And then adapted for TV, so that's not its natural home. He also said in that episode, the millionaire guy comes up with a load more ideas, and yeah, there's additional content on other episodes too. So thanks, Dave, for that. Joe Rogers got in touch to say, hey guys, just heard your latest episode, Shadow and Tax, and you mentioned a section where Simon is writing on Alan's business cards. On the DVD, you get two separate versions, and on one of them, you get the extra footage that we've just talked about. So they did make sure that footage was included on the DVD version too.
Dave wasn't lying or making it up then.
No, yeah. Basically, Joe has confirmed what Dave has already told us.
Unless they're co-conspirers.
Interesting point.
He says, love the show. Definitely need to extend your episodes with more quizzes, even more nitpicking and inane chat. Well,
shouldn't
thanks,
be a
Joe.
Problem.
We're mailing you the full unedited version of this episode, which clocks in about 12 hours.
We're so sorry. Right, yes. Next bit of feedback, we've got for an email from Alex Cohen about Mr. Cragg as featured in Welcome to the Places of My Life. Alex writes, hi there, love the podcast. Thanks, Alex. I was just listening to Welcome to the Places of My Life one, and it occurred to me that the teacher he berates sounds like the same Mr. Cragg chemistry teacher who Michael blows to bits with his Apache attack helicopter in I'm Alan Partridge. So his question to us is, did Michael move to Norwich as a child and attend the same school as Alan, or is Alan just standing up for a friend whose teacher has coincidentally retired from Newcastle to Norwich? Cheers.
I think this is a coincidence / oversight from the writers. I don't think it's the same teacher.
No, I
agree.
I don't think it's even meant to be the same teacher in any... It's just...
There's no evidence to suggest Alan and Michael went to the same school. All of their chat is geared around, I think, them meeting in later life and having had a lot of different life experience.
Yeah. Well, the whole narrative is that they befriended each other when they were at the Linton Travel Tavern, isn't it?
Yeah. So,
yeah, I just think it's basically two teachers who are assholes.
in summary.
That's the conclusion. Thanks, Tom. Sam Prince has got in touch to say, hi there, I'm in the final stages of finishing my PhD and I'm trying to slip in some Alan Partridge. I know exactly what he means here. I slipped some Rage Against the Machine into my dissertation.
Did you?
It went down really? Exceptionally. Yeah.
What, your dissertation?
Fuck you, I won't do what you tell me.
By Nick Elder.
Yeah, I failed.
Did fail.
Yeah. You can't just write that 500 times and count it as words.
I've been struggling to find something and wondered if you had any ideas. The citation will likely appear in the text as Partridge/year, so it needs to be quite subtle and, if possible, somewhat related to the text. So something to do with gender, sociology, sport. Any ideas from any of the published books are welcome. Any ideas?
Well, I've got nothing specific, but if you're looking for gender and sport, I mean, you're sport for choice, aren't you?
I was going to say, there's a hugely complicated relationship between Alan and the opposite gender.
Yeah, there'll be plenty of something from Alan about gyms, gym instructors, people that go to gyms, etc. There'll be something on that.
Yeah. I mean,
if there's something to do with sport, you might...
He was a sports commentator.
He was a sports commentator, yep. Yep. Renowned horse... a lady lollipop,
and when Alan is a sports reporter in the On the Hour years, he is obsessed with groin strain and groin injury as well, isn't he? So there's something in there as well,
or perhaps some sort of comparison between feet and traction engines. Work that in.
You've got all the football ones as well.
Striker,
is there anything with like all the Meteor video when they're talking about water sports and stuff like that? If you want to go down that route, perhaps as well. I would maybe open that up to other listeners. If you've got any good PhD suggestions, then
sex
in.
People.
You're just saying sex people.
Sex people.
Don't rub your fanny on me.
Yeah. So just touched it.
If you do have suggestions for his PhD, then it's thepartridgepod@gmail.com or @thepartridgepod on Twitter.
There is actually a PS or a postscript. He says, I just wondered if you have ever considered the way Alan shields Lynn from the sex festival when he tells Lynn to sit there and away from Dan and Kerry. I thought it showed a protective side to Alan that we rarely see. Interesting to hear your thoughts.
So, I don't think he is. I think he's pushing her away from interacting with Dan, which is what he wants to do.
Yeah, he is trying to seat her away from the sex festival.
Yeah, I think he's right. He's trying to protect her from not getting drawn into. Yeah,
but it's like Denton Abbey. It's not an homage or a tribute to Simon Denton in the same way that this isn't him actually protecting Lynn. It's just an instinctive get away from these people. He's not actually putting her first.
If he is
so you don't think he's trying to get her away from them because they're sex people?
Well, I think he is, but he's doing it for his own good.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
If she ends up in a long conversation with the sex people, it's harder for him to get away.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
Yeah, he basically wants to sort a kitchen and he needs Lynn to come with him while he goes away from Dan to sort out the kitchen.
But don't you think by this point he wants to get out of there as well?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So he's putting himself first, but he needs Lynn to come with him because Lynn came over with kitchen brochures to help sort the kitchen with Dan, the kitchen man.
Well, I think he's trying to protect Lynn and I think it's a very rare moment where he's actually looking out for her as well as himself. Well,
I disagree. He'd go to Legoland.
Well, we can put it to Dan Moody himself, Stephen Mangan, at the London Live Show coming up in a future episode. Although it was 25 years ago, so he may not have an opinion.
And also, there's an argument that we're going too deep into it.
No, that could be our opening question.
Yeah.
Before we start.
Yeah.
Cast your mind back 25 years. What's Lynn's motivation and Alan's here?
Lovely stuff. Thanks, Nick. Next up, we have an email from Sam Musgin Rowe, who says, "Hello, fellow fops, long-time listener, first-time emailer. No idea why I've not thought to get in touch sooner. However, I have some Alan-based insight/literature that may be of interest to the pod. I'm a writer and was working at Loaded when Mid-Morning Matters was first released by Foster's. I remember it well because we managed to convince Steve Coogan, as Alan, to guest edit the magazine and even grace the cover, cupping a glamour model's chest." Brackets, memory glands. A different time, perhaps, there. I don't know if you could do that now.
the end of an era.
Does Loaded even exist anymore? Is it gone?
It hasn't for some time.
Okay, mm-hmm. Okay, that tells you.
See, FHM, Maxim, Arena,
Zoo, Nuts.
All of them.
All of the same magazines now.
Anymore?
Yep. Lovely stuff. Best, Sam. Thanks for that email. Sounds quite interesting.
Esquire is still going.
Yep, okay. And GQ?
Yes.
Men and Motors?
That's a TV show. Topless darts, we've moved on.
Yes, thanks for that, Sam. It's quite interesting. I guess that was obviously part of the marketing and promotional campaign.
Yeah,
I mean,
I think we did talk about how Coogan almost wanted people to kind of discover Mid-Morning Matters almost organically, but then he's doing something like that. That's very much a big piece of promotion.
It's a canny move on Coogan's part to basically
allegedly.
That's not what I was going to say.
That's what Sam said.
I was going to say it's a canny bit of marketing that the only print exposure he's given it is on Corner magazine literally on its last legs.
Although actually I think in the research for this I found out that he also guest edited shortlist as well.
Yes, because I think we talked about there's an article when he talks about Norwich hotspots.
Easy for you to say.
Because he talks about the Boxley Wheatsheaf in that.
Yeah.
Did he not edit it as part of the promotion for Alpha Papa?
I don't know if it was for Alpha Papa.
I feel like it might have been, because otherwise it's a bit...
Yeah.
You know, on its own.
Well, there we go. I think
could have a look, but can't be bothered.
I think that's why they did it.
Okay.
Next up, we had a tweet from at McCafferty21. It says, be good to have a call-in section to the podcast. A pre-selected Pod Partridge fan gets to have their say on the week's episode and engage in some great banter with you guys. Good idea? Or am I on an E or something?
I think
it could be a bit like the real callers to Alan's radio show. Yeah, go very badly.
Possibly kind of likes it that we would, you know, yeah, get to, you know, call people up. We did sort of try it with the Facebook Live thing, but, you know.
And remember, we have had a caller before in one of our first episodes. We had Max, who was born and raised in Norwich, give us some Norwich-based intel.
Well, we are toying with the format that we're going to cover this time in the new Partridge Show when it comes towards the end of this year or the start of next year, as we now know it's likely to be. So maybe we could throw a caller in. Let's see how we go.
Yeah, let's have a think about a way that we could, maybe if there's a way that people can leave messages or something like that, and then we can select the best.
We could have a Partridge WhatsApp. No, that would spiral out of control if we had a WhatsApp group.
It's already bad enough with ours.
True.
But let's leave it. What you're saying is you want us to read out your mobile number and people could just add you.
07.
So that's 077. Another listener question here on the subject of time travel from Matt Andrews. Matt says, if Alan had to go back in time to any historical era, which do you think he'd choose? And I'll actually tell you, Matt did then tweet us again about 2 weeks later saying, I've thought about this and think that Alan, being a known gemble, he'd surely like to go back to the Middle Ages and attempt to become a knight. So I think he's kind of answered his own question there. But any other thoughts on Alan going back to any historical era of his choosing?
I think he'd stay in Britain.
Safety of Britain.
And I imagine he'd be looking at somewhere between the 16 and 1900s.
I've got Tudors for some reason in my head. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking he'd go to the Tudor times.
I can imagine Alan in a ruff.
Yeah. I think he, you know, the style, the attitudes to women and people would suit him. He'd probably thrive better than he does in 2018.
He could be a town crier.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, what is the equivalent of a broadcaster in those day and age?
A town crier in Tudor times, that suits him.
With Psychic Simon as a jester.
Yes, I'm liking this, Adam. I'm liking this a lot.
Nailed it.
There we go. We now have a message from Scott Birch, and he asks, what songs would Alan pick to have been played at his funeral? The theme tune to Black Beauty, obviously. Then Nobody Does It Better from The Spy Who Loved Me.
So those are Scott's suggestions, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would, on a sort of Bond tip, I would throw in A View to a Kill by Duran Duran, which for me is one of the best Bond songs.
I would be surprised if he recorded his own funeral song.
a jingle.
Recorded some sort of cover.
Back announcing his coffin going through to the cremation. Yeah.
He would commentate his own funeral, wouldn't he? He'd have recorded a special half-hour radio show, tribute to himself.
That's brilliant. Yeah, he absolutely
He's put it out to sponsors as well, hasn't he? Like, there's a sponsorship option if someone's prepared to pay for it.
Also, it sounds like from what Scott's asked here, he said what songs would Alan pick to have played at his funeral. Yeah. I presume he's talking about Alan's funeral from the choices.
Not Scott's.
But if Alan did have to pick David Cassidy... What would be played at David Cassidy's funeral? Probably the best of the Partridge family, right?
Yeah. Or Sail Away by Enya.
Also very good. I was going to suggest a minute's silence for David Cassidy, but as we all know, dead air is a crime.
Oh, very good.
I think he'd go for The Winner Takes It All. I think he'd want to go out on a high, like he was the real winner, even though he's actually dead.
And now I'm going to cover a section of the feedback, which is quite substantial. We've called it Books Balls Ups, and it's basically a summary of all the listeners that mentioned exactly the same thing. So we've had messages from Chris Payne, Tom Smith, Martin Connor, Simi Simcoe, and Donna Tart. Is there any more on the other side? No.
Donna Tart?
That says Dean Tonner.
Dean Tonner.
Sorry, Dean Tonner.
Donna Tart's an author.
Not the author. Okay. I'll do that again. The author of The Secret History hasn't emailed us, sadly. No, I'm not sure that she listened.
I've got no idea why I said that. Anyway, so all those people emailed in or messaged us. Basically, in one of the episodes of Mid Morning Matters, we discussed, has Alan ever finished a book? We all agreed that no, he hadn't. And actually, it was pointed out by all those people that I've just read out that he has, of course, read Bravo 2.0, which, as we know, improves with every read. So we got that one bang wrong, didn't we?
Although I think there is an argument to be made, has he actually finished it? Is he making out like he's finished it?
As we know from episode episodes we're about to cover on tour, sometimes he does claim to have read books that he actually hasn't.
Exactly.
Very good point.
And I think in Tom Smith's email here as well, he made the interesting point that when he's on the Prayer Wave radio show, yes, in our Alan Partridge series 2, they ask if he's read the character of Julie Davis, whether he's read her book. He says he only read the bit where she says she put drugs up her bum and looked at the pictures in the central spine. So it does seem like Alan definitely has form on not finishing books. So
agreed.
It might just be he has a favourite chapter in Bravo T-Zero, which keeps improving with every read.
And just a couple of bits from those emails. Simi Simcore called us dwads.
fair point.
Also said, fops need to stop getting Alan wrong. So, sorry about
fops.
That. We're fops.
Okay, yeah, we're fops. Just checking.
We're not AIDS, we're fops. Okay. But you may notice if you're a regular listener that when we do these feedback episodes, we do normally have some balls up sections. And I'm pretty sure there are a few more of those to come.
Absolutely. Drew Cameron got in touch talking about the fact that we mentioned apparently that Patrick Marber played a train driver in Mission Impossible 2.
Yes.
He said, I rewatched the movie, painful as it was. Oh, it's a bit harsh. I think it's quite good.
I think the first one's great.
But to find him, but I could not. However, I do remember that in the original Mission Impossible movie, David Schneider, aka Tony Hares, did indeed play a train driver. It may be entirely possible my bored eyes simply missed Marber's fleeting cameo. To be honest, I think it's more likely that all four of us have got it wrong. He said, perhaps there's a theme of Partridge alums driving trains in Mission Impossible movies. I look forward to seeing friend of the show Simon Greenall appearing in the upcoming Mission Impossible 6. Obviously, that film is booted and gone, sadly, without a Simon Greenall cameo. But I was thinking, wouldn't it be amazing if just for once there was a Mission Impossible film where instead of Tom Cruise pulling all these stunts off, it was just Simon Greenall jumping off cliffs going, oh shit!
Would watch. So I think we can get to the bottom of this. It's listed incorrectly on IMDb, isn't it? I think that's where we got the information.
Definitely got it from IMDb.
Always happy to hear that in actual fact it's not our fault, it's someone else's. So
yeah. Thanks Amazon.
If that is your real name.
Yeah.
Just talk amongst yourselves, I'm going to double check that information.
Okay, so while Tom looks it up, what is the best Mission Impossible film?
Ooh.
I really, really liked the recent one. I loved it.
Can I just shock you? I've only seen Mission Impossible 1.
What? Oh. Be real?
I've got better things to do in my time.
Unbelievable. 1 is brilliant. And apart from 2, they're all largely good.
Yeah. Jed, what's your favourite Mission Impossible film?
The most recent one, of course.
Yeah, correct.
Ghost Fallout.
That was too many words. I was looking for a number.
Ghost Balls Ups. Yeah. I've checked IMDb and Patrick Marber is credited as... he says he's credited on here. Mission Impossible 2, the role was train driver and brackets uncredited.
So, is that where the error is, though? Because this is Mission Impossible 1.
That's what I'm saying. I think I'm pretty sure this is an error unless you really have Patrick Marber in one film and David Schneider in another.
Well, David Schneider is 100% in Mission Impossible
1. I'm not denying that.
Stop denying it.
In Drew's email, he literally sent us a screenshot to prove it. So I wonder whether the Marber thing is an incorrect attribution.
There's only one way to sort this out. We're cancelling the Bristol show tonight and we're going to watch Mission Impossible 2.
I thought you were going to say call Patrick Marber, but no, that seems easy.
Call Cliff Thorburn.
Now it's time for another email from Rachel Sylvester. Rachel says, hello, Tom, Nick, and Adam, and then brackets, and Jed.
And Jed. Jed
is spelt wrong. You can spell it like that, but that's not how our Jed spells it. So,
Our Jed. Spelt J-E-Z.
Lovely Jez. So I'll just read Rachel's email. I thought I would write to you all to say how much I love / enjoy your Partridge podcast. A friend told me about you a while back, and I must have
just say as well, love and then sort of / enjoy. Yeah, it's close to really like and tolerate.
Yeah, one of the two. I must have listened to your podcast 3 times over. Another one of my interests and obsessions, apart from Alan, is true crime. Brackets, don't worry, I myself are not a serial killer, grammatically incorrect.
Or a good speller.
Yep.
And that's grammar, Adam, to be fair.
Grammar. Sure. Or a pedant.
Sometimes I listen and watch too many serial killer / murderous podcasts and TV shows to the point of having night terrors. One particular day I was quite disturbed and listened to your podcast to calm my nerves. 8 full hours of Monkey Tennis, brackets, particularly the one on Knowing Me Knowing You, where Nick loses it over the bad comedian, and I don't regret a thing.
That cheeky monkey.
Yeah, Max Beasley.
He made me
Joe Beasley.
Joe Beasley.
In short, Rachel finishes, in short, this email wasn't meant to be as weird as it might seem. I just wanted to say I love you. I love you all and your podcast, and thank you for calming my nerves with the love of Alan that you share. I was hoping to come and see you live in Manchester, but I'll be on holiday in Greece, sadly, so catch you next time.
I mean, if I'd finished watching hours of murderous podcasts...
Are you about to insult our listeners
by
again,
the way,
Adam?
A podcast can't murder people, but still, and TV shows. The last
maybe it can.
The last thing I'd want is 8 full hours of Monkey Tennis. Surely that's enough to send you off the edge.
Yeah.
Well, we've recorded it for 8 hours, so I can tell you what that's like.
Yeah, it's bloody awful.
Estelle Coombs has written to us and says, hey guys, did you ever watch the live show, which was called something like Steve Coogan as AP and other less successful characters? Did I see that with you?
Yes, you did.
That's Tom Dark.
Yep.
And Adam?
No, I was not there.
Okay, probably not invited.
I went to go see it in Oxford with my friend Chris. Wow.
I don't think I even knew Tom Stapp in those days.
Oh, wow.
A different time.
Better days. Better days.
So, yes, we have seen that. That's what we're saying, Estelle.
Yeah, Estelle goes on to say, the other characters were the first half, and I thought they were pretty sad. So that's Steve's other characters in the first half, yep. And then Alan very much in the second half. So the second act was Alan presenting Forward Solutions, which was pretty much the only funny part of the show. Ooh, sorry, Steve. Needless to say, Alan had the last laugh when he entered the stage with his aha and the microphone cut out, so we couldn't actually hear it.
That must have been so annoying for Coogan. Absolutely. That's his entrance moment and silence.
Was this whole section sponsored by Whiskers?
This brings us to the final section of the show. It was a play about Cardinal Wolsey or maybe Henry VIII. I honestly can't remember. I mean, I can't remember either.
Neither can I.
And she goes on to say, as I'd zoned out and was daydreaming of Alan dancing around with ghosts. The show was dreadful and certainly did not... certainly did not help Alan bounce back. Anyway, that's where Forward Solutions came from, and I genuinely hope you didn't see it like live like I did. Estelle, we did. Well, Tom and I did.
Yeah, and I think I kind of agree. I think.
Sorry, and you. You did tell us that not a minute ago.
You weren't with us, though.
Yeah, but you weren't there.
I mean, I'd agree with Estelle. I think the first bit with the other characters was not great, although yes. The Pauline Calf bit was great, because that's where she's reading her spy thriller,
which has
the line, the immortal line, at that point, she shat herself. That was gold.
Given that I didn't see this show, is Estelle's savaging of the show fair?
It's not great.
Well, the Alan bit was by far the best bit, and that was the second half, so that's basically what everybody was waiting for. And I did think the Alan bit was good. The Forward Solutions bit was very funny.
Yep.
So, yeah, we're agreeing.
So, we're all dog lovers around the table, so we're going to come on to some dog...
Ambivalent.
Adam!
You animal.
Well, not animal lover.
He doesn't like them. Yeah.
So anyway, we've had some feedback on dog errors. So
We could have called this dog balls up, but I thought that looked a bit wrong. So.
Sounds a bit wrong as well, doesn't it? At Simon Dweck has got in touch and says, podcast error, re-dog love.
My favourite 5 opening words of any tweet.
You say Alan had no dogs between childhood and Seldom. He and Carol had Montgomery, as discussed with Daniela Forrest. So, yeah, that is a bit of a balls up, isn't it? He did have a dog.
Keep going.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's not the only one that's pointed that out.
I think basically quite a few people are pointing this out.
Yeah.
Yeah, but not even just that dog.
In our defence, I'd like to say we were briefly mindless, because, of course, we know the dog section. We recorded episodes about Naomi Knowing You, and also he even had the Victorian dog section as well.
Yeah.
So I think it's just that at the point of recording, we just temporarily all forgot the same information.
Yeah. We are getting to the point now where we're trying to maintain over 20 years of Alan history between us.
How did the Kibbins brothers do it?
Yeah, get paid?
I mean, it might surprise you. We're not experts.
Yeah. Malcolm, speak for yourself. Actually, no, we're not, are we? Blatantly obvious looking at all these errors. Malcolm Robb got in touch and said, did he not also have an imaginary dog called Rommel?
Yes, Malcolm, that's correct.
Important point, imaginary dogs are not dogs. Continue.
He's got him there.
Simon got in touch again, saying, not sure why I consider dog expert to have sexual connotations like Keith Lard in Phoenix Nights.
Yeah, I think there was some kind of Twitter back and forth here about that character as well. I can't quite remember. It's quite a while ago.
Barney got in touch as well. Re Alan having a dog. Doesn't he mention a dog to Daniela Forrest at some point?
Yes, he does.
Yep.
Freya also got in touch. Boys, I like this, stern. In terms of the Alan dog timeline, don't forget Rommel from Daniela Forrest.
I believe we've established that.
Also, it is worth mentioning that basically Rommel is the fictional version of Montgomery, so they are technically the same dog, if anything.
Yeah, okay.
If we're being pedants, which we are.
And finally, Michael Brennan on Facebook got in touch saying, good feedback episode, read the dog issue. Alan did have a dog whilst married to Carol, named Montgomery. He is referenced when talking to Dan the Man Forrest. So basically, all these people have got in touch and said, we've got absolute dog balls ups.
We've got dog balls ups.
Moving from dog error to dog theory, Dan Chasemore got in touch on Facebook and said, hey there, I have a dog theory. That's handy because we're in a section called dog theory. Dogs are actually very important to Alan, revealing a deep part of his psyche that's he's never been able to deal with friends and family being taken away from him. Alan had a dog in 1994 while he was still married to Carol. In Know Me, Knowing You, we obviously just covered Daniela Forrest and his dog, Montgomery. This dog seems pretty old because he's blind in one eye and can't control his bladder, so I'm guessing that Alan had him for a while. Dogs live about 11 11 or 12 years, I'm enjoying this deep dive, Dan. Well done.
this is a fantastic email, Dan. Dan's a fantastic man.
11 or 12 years, so it's reasonable to assume that Carol and Alan have this family dog for all or most of their marriage. And it's only a few weeks after this confession that Carol leaves him taking the house. I wouldn't have thought Linton Travel Tavern allowed dogs, be real. So that means that Carol not only took Alan's marriage, his house and his kids away from him, she also took his dog, his best friend, Montgomery. Aww. Years later, when he's in a trusting, stable relationship with Angela, he finds himself again in a situation where everything is falling apart. Spoiler alert. Angela leaves him, spoiler alert, presumably with the kids. But what does he cling on to? Right until the end, so the police have to be called in order to take it back, the dog. Just thought I'd point that out because I'm a massive Partridge nerd. Yes, you are, and a great point.
Yeah, and I think he also attached a screenshot from a Mid Morning Matter Series 2 here of Alan kind of handing over Freddy the dog to the policeman.
A genuinely
here as well.
Moving moment.
Sorry, do you want to cover?
Oh, yeah, sure. The way that he's explained this is really great. He says, as Freddy the dog in Mid Morning Matter Series 2 is taken away, he says, and then he was gone forever. Like Montgomery, like Carol, like the bullet fired from that gun in the final episode of Naomi Knowing You. Everyone leaves Alan, with the inclusion of Michael, who dies.
That is a brilliant email. Yeah, that is fantastic.
I'm tearing up here.
Thank you for the feedback on the feedback. Before we eat our own tails and go all meta, remember you can get in touch with us. It's thepartridgepod@gmail.com. We're on Facebook at thepartridgepod. And it's Twitter at thepartridgepod. Please email us, get in touch, Twitter us, phone us.
Twitter us!
You've also missed Instagram.
All that good stuff. We're everywhere.
Instagram's at
monkeytennispod.com. Come find us, join us. Thank you, goodbye.
Gotta go.
Bye.
Monkey tennis?
Well, this is great banter.
Hot, 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 ham.
Monkey tennis?
Radical. Awesome.
Mega.
Are you on an E?
Monkey tennis?
Yeah.
I'm spinning plates here, mate, I'll be honest.
Monkey tennis?
There have been times when I've been more rubbery than turgid.
Monkey tennis?
Tits bits. Tit bits.
Yes.
It's just an idiom.
You're an idiot.
Ooh, that's mustard.
Monkey tennis?
Sustaining and maintaining our core listenership in an increasingly fragmented marketplace.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.